Is this on?
Okay. Good morning, good afternoon. The title of my talk is A Spectral Element Semi-Lagrangian Atmospheric Model, and this is work that's currently being funded by the Office of Naval Research. What is the CSLAM, or the Spectral Element Semi-Lagrangian Atmospheric Model? Well, I guess right now the way it stands is it's basically the hydrostatic primitive equations. I'm using a spectral element in space and then semi-Lagrangian in time. And then I combine these two and I call it SESL, the spectral element semi-Lagrangian method. What that means is that the high order basis functions that, this math doesn't work too well, of the spectral element method is actually used to do your semi-Lagrangian departure point interpolations. So in other words, if I say that I'm using 16th order basis functions, that's also the same stencil I'm using to do my semi-Lagrangian interpolation. And here's an example of how this spectral element semi-Lagrangian method works. Say you want to say this is what your Eulerian element looks like, this pink box there. So that's what the E stands for Eulerian. So you basically, you solve this trajectory equation, dx dt equals u, and you track back in time to your departure points. And then once you get into that box there, for example, if we have 16th order polynomials inside of here, inside these spectral elements, then I'm also using 16th order polynomials to get my departure points inside of this box here. And obviously the yellow box here would use this element here, the red box would use this element here, and so forth. Okay, so the atmospheric equations, they look like this: conservation of mass, and this is pi to the terrain pressure, conservation of momentum, and again, it looks kind of funny with the Coriolis terms because I use Cartesian coordinates. And I dropped off, there should be a Lagrange multiplier out here, but I dropped it off, so I don't have to really, I guess I talked about it on Tuesday, roughly. So. And then this is the energy equation, I use potential temperature. And finally, I have the hydrostatic equation that looks like this. Okay. So then the first thing you do is you write the equations in Lagrangian form, which means that all your advection terms and the derivative of respect to time are on the left-hand side. And then we have all the other terms, source terms, on the right-hand side. And look how nice the energy equation looks. It's just really, in potential temperature, looks really nice like that. And then what we do is we have to solve these trajectory equations. And now capital X is actually X, Y, Z, and sigma, right? Because on each of my spherical shells, I have X, Y, and Z coordinates. And then I have a sigma coordinate for my vertical coordinate system. And of course, then U now has to be, capital U has to be U, V, and W, which are my three Cartesian velocities on each spherical shell. And then I have sigma dot, which is my vertical velocity. No, because actually, U, V, and W really are your zonal and Marriott lambda and theta velocities, right? So yeah, it really is just it's essentially a 2D surface problem, or 3D surface, I should say. Okay, so first thing I do is I linearize my terrain pressure, right, about some reference terrain pressure, pi star. And that what that does is then now allows my right-hand side to be linear, okay, with respect to u. Oh, I guess I should say that I've also now discretized the equations by an implicit semi-Lagrangian method. So all the left-hand side terms are where your Lagrangian derivatives were, and that's how they're discretized in this manner. And so what happens is on the right-hand side, your source terms are all at n plus 1. They're all at arrival points. So you don't have to deal with any derivatives or anything like that at your departure points, which is a real pain. Okay, and of course, let's see. So temperature looks as this is momentum here, and then the energy equation looks nice and simple. So basically from here, from the energy equation, we can actually solve for theta n plus 1 at the arrival point and then use it in all these expressions here. I guess here is where it comes in the momentum equation. And trajectory equations you can solve in a variety of ways. What I've been using is this second-order Runge-Kutta method, which is just your explicit midpoint rule. You can also use your implicit midpoint rule, which means you have to iterate to get your arrival points, but this is fine this way. It's also second order. And you can extend this to fourth order if you like, or any other order you want. Okay, so the next thing we need to do is, if you look at the momentum equation, well, we need to do some linearizations because the phi, your Joule potential, is at n plus 1, right? So how do we approximate that for to solve our momentum equations? Well, you start with the hydrostatic equation, right? And then you solve this problem in some vertical discretization. You can use finite elements if you like. You can use spectral elements. You can use finite differences. I'm actually using spectral elements also in the vertical. And let's see, where's my mouse? There it is. And basically what you can do is you can end up solving this system that looks like this, okay, where A, the inverse A here, is actually independent of your spherical coordinates x, y, z. It's all, they're only a function of sigma. And what I've done here is, obviously what you see is that you can actually write phi at n plus 1 now solely as a function of your terrain pressure at n plus 1. And so now your gradient looks something like this. It's quite easy because now basically it's only dependent on your terrain pressure at n plus 1, which is what we're going to end up solving our Helmholtz problem in terms of the terrain pressure. Okay, so now I know how to approximate this this Joule potential, and now the next thing I need to do is I need to do some kind of linearization for this term here, because remember theta n plus 1, actually I know theta n plus 1 now from my semi-Lagrangian or Lagrangian formulation of the energy equation, but this external pressure P is also at n plus 1, but then so is the terrain pressure, right? So you have to do some kind of linearization. And I just do this simple type of linearization here based on about some reference pressure and temperature. And I'm not sure how much this is affecting my solutions at this point. I should look into this a bit further. And I guess I should say that you don't really have to linearize with respect to the temperature because we already know the temperature. Okay, so now what I do is, you can see that what I've tried doing is I've tried to decouple the momentum equations, and what I mean by that is that inside this A sub U, the Coriolis terms are lurking inside there. Okay? So what I can do now, once I do this decoupling, I can plug in U, well, here, let's now plug in all of our linearizations, the momentum equations. Well, this term here, that comes from your Joule potential term. And let's see, this term here, right, comes from the this linearization here. Okay, so now all you see is that this equation is now a function of your terrain pressure at n plus 1. Okay, so that's the key point of this slide here. So now what I can do is I can now plug in the divergence of this velocity field into the mass equation. Okay, so beginning with the mass equation, it looks something like this, right? I can plug in for this box, this blue box here. I can plug in this moment, this linearized momentum equation, and then it ends up giving me some kind of mass equation that looks of this form. Okay, it's not moving very well, but okay. So now what happens is we're going to be solving this equation for obviously for terrain pressure. So here's terrain pressure n plus one, and here's the gradient of terrain pressure n plus 1, and you end up getting some Helmholtz operator. And what I want to show you here is that the expression in the parentheses here, that's only, this expression is only a function of sigma. It's not a function of x, y, z of your horizontal coordinate system. So now I can rewrite this in some Helmholtz form of this form, and now I have to think about how I'm going to solve this equation. Okay, so let's start by applying the spectral element method. So we start with the weak integral form, which says find this terrain pressure and the spaces function psi that are inside the space of square integrable functions, such that when you apply this inner product, the residual, you minimize the residual. This is a typical method of weighted residuals. Okay. And I guess what I should point out is that now, this is done in an element-by-element sense, right? This method of weighted residuals. And this omega sub e are your elements, are your spectral elements. But now, in my case now, beside they're actually, well, you can think of them as being these cubic elements, right? Because you have quadrilaterals in the horizontal direction, now you have these 1D elements in the vertical direction. And you can apply Green's theorem, integration by parts, to get something like this. And actually, what I ended up doing is I'm also using no flux boundary conditions at the top and bottom of the atmosphere, and then I have periodicity in the horizontal direction. So I get rid of my term that has boundaries, the boundary term. Okay. I guess the one difference from my talk on Tuesday and this talk with respect to the polynomial approximations is now you see that I now have, instead of just having x, y, z, I also have sigma in terms of my basis functions. Okay, so basically in the spectral element approximation, I now have to approximate the terrain pressure by some polynomial expansion of this form. All right, and rather than doing it in physical coordinates, you want to do it in computational coordinates. It's a lot easier, right? Because you have one master element and you map everything to that master element. And now in my case, this psi sub hat here is actually going to be a 3D basis function. And when you look at it, it's actually quite simple because you just end up using, actually this should say 3D basis functions, not 2D. And because what actually you have is a tensor product of 1D basis functions. You have three tensor products, right? You have J from 0 to N and K from 0 to N are your horizontal basis functions. And I actually have decoupled the vertical direction, so I have from L goes to 0 to NV, which is your basis in the vertical, the order of your basis in the vertical direction, which doesn't have to be the same as your horizontal direction. Okay, and then these functions H are just your Lagrange polynomials constructed in this form like that, where the Xi's are actually your sampling points or Legendre-Gauss-Laplace points. Okay, so now the question is, we have this mass equation and we discretize by the spectral element method and yet I'm getting some kind of matrix equation of this form, right, where everything on the right-hand side is known, A is some large matrix, and then pi sub hat is what you're looking for, which is your terrain pressure at n plus 1. And now what actually happens is because pi sub hat is only a 2D value, right? It's only the surface pressure. Well, this Helmholtz operator ends up being a 2D Helmholtz operator. Of course, implied in there is a 3D because you've actually done the vertical integral and summed them up, and it's inside this matrix A. So that's the point I wanted to make here in the slide, is that because the terrain pressure is not a function of sigma, at least not at the arrival points, right? They're very different. The departure point terrain pressures are a function of sigma. But they're all on the right-hand side at this point. Okay, so now we have to solve the system. And what I've been doing so far is just using a GM-RES solver that Paul Fish at Argonne National Lab gave to me. And we've been playing around with doing some Jacobi preconditioning, which is just basically, like Steve Thomas talked about some of this stuff the other day, it's just essentially using the diagonal, an approximation to the diagonal matrix of this matrix A. That's your preconditioner. So it's very simple. And unfortunately, it doesn't really converge quickly, especially for very large time steps. So that's an issue. So we need to explore some other type of preconditioning. We could probably use something like H-type preconditioning, which is basically, Steve also talked about this the other day, is simplifying or approximating your higher order basis function elements, right, into these 1D or, sorry, these linear elements. And then you have a tighter band in your matrix. It's asymmetric. Why? Oh, the matrix is asymmetric because of the Coriolis terms. If I move the Coriolis terms to the right-hand side, it'd be symmetric. Yeah. That's right. Otherwise, yeah, if I could do that, then I'd probably just use conjugate gradient methods. Yeah. 10? Oh, yeah, I think I'm almost done. No worries. Okay, properties of the spectral and the semi-Lagrangian atmospheric model. Well, I'm going to show you, I'm going to try to convince you that the discrete horizontal operators converge exponentially. And if I can convince you of that, you can try to convince me of that, because I'm not so sure. Here's shallow water tests using the spectral and semi-Lagrangian method, cases 1, 2, and 3. And okay, now I know that case 1, I shouldn't get exponential conversion, so I feel much better about that. Cases 2 and 3 converge quickly, but I don't think they're converging exponentially, and I'm not sure why. But I'm still getting, you know, for about, I've only gone as far as 32nd order polynomials inside each element, and I'm getting about 10 to the, between 10 to the minus 8th to 10 to the minus 7th L2 error norms for those two cases. So they're very accurate. Now, what do I need exponential convergence? I'm not sure. But. That's after 5 days. After 5 days for cases 2 and 3, and after 12 days for case 1. Okay, the spectral and semi-Lagrangian atmospheric model allows for large time steps without losing accuracy. And what I've done here is I've shown, again, these are shallow water test cases for case 5 at 10 days, and the first row is the spectral element method with Adam Bashforth. So it's purely explicit, and in the time step that it uses is the Adams-Bashforth time step limit, the largest time step you can use with that explicit method. And then below that, this is the spectral element semi-implicit method, where now the gradient terms are being approximated by a Crank-Nicholson method, or, you know, trapezoidal rule. Okay, and that's using a time step twice as big as the explicit time step method allows. And finally, the spectral semi-Lagrangian method is using a time step about 10 times larger. And this is after 10 days. And the results actually look very good between both implicit methods. So the Crank-Nicholson method and then the semi-Lagrangian method look very similar. There's a little bit of difference with the explicit form, but not very much. Okay, this is now shallow water test case 6, after 14 days looking from the North Pole. And again, the first row is the explicit spectral element method, the second row is the semi-implicit method, and finally the semi-Lagrangian method using a time step 10 times as large. So you see there's not a whole lot of difference. And I've done this for longer tests, longer integrations, and they look pretty good. In fact, I've run it for 30 days, maybe 20 days actually. Okay, so now I've shown you shallow water test cases, and so I guess I need to show you, since I did say it was an atmospheric model, right, I have to show you some atmospheric test cases. And this one, again, I've tried running the semi-Lagrangian method with time steps larger than my spectral element Eulerian model. And so here's case number, this Rossby wave number 4, again, like I showed you the other day. These are values at the surface for pressure on the left, top left, temperature on top right, and then zonal and V velocity at the bottom there. So this is for the spectral element atmospheric model at T80 resolution running 24 vertical levels, and this is a snapshot at 5 days, okay, running the largest time step that this Eulerian method, explicit Eulerian method, can run. And this is the semi-Lagrangian result after five days using a time step 5 times as large. I couldn't run one 10 times as large, and it has to do with my, I think it has to do with how I'm doing my vertical spectral elements. I'm getting some funny stuff at the top of the atmosphere, especially you can see it in the potential temperature equation. I have stuff bouncing off, and I'm not quite sure I've resolved why that's happening. But you can really notice it with the large less time steps. Okay, and I guess as a comparison, I also show you the NOGAS result. This looks like this after 5 days. So, I mean, is it working yet? I don't know. I've done about 3 test cases, and so far so good, but I still think I have to resolve something at the boundary, at the top boundary. And one of the key issues is in this vertical discretization. I think that the way you do your hydrostatic equation is really, really important. All right, the last thing I can tell you about the spectral and semi-Lagrangian method is that you can also make it monotonic. And the way you do that is because it is based on interpolations, right? You can use some kind of monotone interpolation schemes like, you know, flux-corrected transport methods. And my only, I guess, example of this is showing you a shallow water test case. Number one, but instead of having a cosine hill, if you put in a circular column, you know, it's basically to the analog of a square wave. So here on the left here is the spectral element method with no filtering whatsoever after about 12 days. And if you look at the profile along the equator, this is what you get. You get some really, really noisy stuff. If you run the spectral element semi-Lagrangian method with no filtering again, you clean up a lot of that noise. And then finally, if you add a flux-corrected transport method to your spectral element semi-Lagrangian, you clean up even more. You know, you still have some bumpy stuff at, you know, before and aft and then some of the top here, but it looks a lot better. So I guess my argument is if this is your moisture equation, I think you'd rather have something like this than something like that. Right. Okay, future plans. This is still a serial model. There's no MPI, so I need to develop the MPI version of the semi-Lagrangian. I don't know how easy that's going to be. I think people have done it before, but I haven't done it, so I don't know. I want to benchmark that model, and it probably allow me to figure out, run test cases a lot quicker enough so I can sort out problems at the top of the atmosphere. And then I'd like to add some moist physics and terrain, like I am also doing to the Eulerian model. And I need to look at better preconditioning and solvers. And I'll be visiting Steve Thomas at NCAR in about a week and a half, so we can work on some of that stuff. And then finally, as John Boyd proposed, we can try different types of basis functions. So maybe these prolate spheroidal basis functions might be something worth trying. Thank you very much.